Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody, and Happy New Year! It is another episode of IT Babble, and I am joined, and I believe you're in Bangkok now, Tony?
That is correct. I'm in Bangkok.
On holiday, I take it, for your winter holiday?
Yeah, because it's warm here.
Yeah. And Korea is not a warm place in the winter.
Yeah, a lot of people think if you live on an island that it's warm. There's a lot of really cold islands. I would probably say there's just as many cold islands as warm islands in the world. And the island I live on is cold. It already snowed. It snowed while we were gone.
Wow. Snow is cold. And Bangkok is not cold, because Bangkok never snows. I'm sure it does every now and again, but
I don't know. I don't know if it's ever snowed here.
I don't know. It's a warm place. I love Bangkok. It's great. If you've never visited Bangkok, people, go visit. There's lots to do. It's fairly cheap to be there, and the people are super, super friendly.
Very friendly.
Yep. A very family-friendly family-friendly city, I would say. So, anyway, that's it. That's our show today. TripAdvisor, go to Bangkok. Okay, on our show, we're gonna Tony, you're gonna talk about Ubuntu, the new Ubuntu. We're gonna talk about crisis plans for IT departments. I have a little thing that artificial intelligence still sucks. It still sucks in 2018. But first, we're gonna start off with. You found this article on the, hold on here, let me, I'm bringing it up, on the National Review, which I believe is this a British publication here?
Yeah, but to be fair, I found it on Slashdot, because that's pretty much how I get all my news, as sad as that might be to a lot of people. I found it on Slashdot. People were having debates about it. And yes, it's on the National Review.
And the article is called Beware Silicon Valley's Gifts to Our Schools by Michelle Malkin. And it was just published yesterday on the 27th, December 27th, 2018.
Yeah.
And I haven't read this yet, but I'll let you get started and I will chime in.
Well, the reason I posted this article discussed wasn't actually necessarily what the article said. So first off, it starts off by saying, Apple showered rural Idaho school with 500 iPads and an Apple TV for every classroom. It talks about all this stuff that, Silicon Valley is giving to schools. And this writer, she says she likes to call it edutech shiny toy syndrome. The thing is, the article has almost no actual information. Okay. And you just keep reading it. And, you get towards the bottom, and the last three paragraphs are actually just seem to be a hit piece on Facebook. And that's what drew my attention to it, because I don't actually think this is a real article. I think this is literally just a hit piece on Facebook, because listen to these words. Okay, this is the third to last paragraph. Okay. It says, Facebook is peddling something called Summit Learning. The word peddling, Patrick, when do we normally use that?
Usually for a dishonest salesman or somebody selling something of low quality.
Now, don't get me wrong. I have no love for social media, but if I were to write this, I would say Facebook has a product called Summit Learning. Currently, there is blah, blah, blah. I would add some information, and it says, no outside research supports any claim. Well, no outside research supports any claim either way. There's no information here. It's just the last three paragraphs are just negative on Facebook. And I'm just bringing it up because I'm seeing this kind of anti-social media trend everywhere. Now, I know a lot of people are like, wait, what about Apple giving stuff to Idaho? I don't really know if that's true. I don't know if it was a personal gift by Tim Cook. I don't know why he did it. And there's no information. And you know, if a billionaire wants to go to the middle of nowhere and help a school get resources, I don't know if that's going to help all the kids learn or not, but I know that the kids in the other school in the city that has money, they all have those resources. So, you know, like whatever. But yeah, I'm just more interested in this social media hate aspect. Patrick, what do you think?
Oh yeah, it is rampant right now. Right before we started recording, I told you that I believe it was The Verge, and it was a few weeks ago, where they posted three very negative stories about Facebook, three separate stories about Facebook within hours of each other. You're just like, wow. I mean, I know Facebook hasn't had a good year. They've certainly had their stumbling, and I'm not defending them. I'm not on Facebook myself because I don't like the way they treat their customers, which, and I think, and I'm not going to get into that. I feel like the user should be the customer, but we're not the customer. We're the product, and I get all that stuff. And I didn't like that, so I got off of Facebook. But they're just hating it and hating it and hating it and hating it and hating it. But Facebook really hasn't done anything illegal or wrong. And their terms of service are clearly spelled out. And people have been sounding the alarm about them for a while. But just now they're starting to take action. But it's been ongoing and ramping up more and more and more and more and more, this Facebook hate. And not just Facebook hate, but Twitter as well. Snapchat is hardly mentioned at all. Instagram. People still seem to like the old Instagram. But, of course, it's because Instagram is owned by Facebook, it's just a matter of time before Instagram has its fall. Correct. As well. Yeah. And YouTube has been, I think, under quite a bit of a scrutiny as well.
They've been struggling.
They've been really struggling with their appearance, even though it is, you know, it's billions of people view it every day.
I think some of these systems should be, you know, they just need to be categorized differently. Like YouTube, I believe if YouTube charged people that wanted to use it, let's say like $5 a year, and you could use gift cards, meaning people could buy gift cards for each other, I'm pretty sure the majority of YouTube users would pay $5 a year.
Yeah.
But I actually don't believe anyone would pay for Facebook or Instagram.
No. I wouldn't. I wouldn't. In fact, I'm not on either of them. I'm not on any Facebook product. And
I was thinking about this the other day. I would pay like, let's say, $7 to $10 a year for Gmail, Facebook, Google Hangouts, and all their products that you currently get for free. I think, again, as long as you can give people gift cards, and I say gift cards because that lets parents set up accounts for kids, and it lets people who, you know, if they want to give somebody, like, if they want to sponsor them or help them out, it's an easy way to do it. Those are really useful products. I used YouTube yesterday to learn about how to deal with, like, water problems in a house. That's super valuable information.
Yeah.
And if YouTube set up a plan to do some profit sharing with certain channels, all of these issues with people trying to solicit through social media and everything else, they would end because there would be cash flow.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think that there's a battle going on. I hope that YouTube, and I'm not, you know, I don't think Google's perfect, but I hope that YouTube and Google find a way to distance themselves. Maybe it's good that Google Plus really isn't big, so nobody even thinks about it.
Yeah.
But I just think the other thing, too, is with these Facebook hit pieces, and that's what I'm going to call them, they're written as news articles, but they're not. They're definitely, there's no news in the article. There's no information. And I think they're good examples if you're working with older kids, especially, I would say, even grade 7 and up. You pull these articles and you have the students read them and say, what information is in this article? Like, what is this about?
Yeah.
Because it's obviously somebody came to this writer and said, we want you to do a piece on Facebook and we don't want it to be nice. That's what I think happened.
and you have to understand, like, The Verge, well, you understand, but The Verge is owned by Vox Media. And Vox Media is a large news organization, and they have different branches and reach all over the place. And Vox Media is owned by Comcast, which it does NBC. They do all sorts of Facebook is taking money out of, I feel, newspapers, radio, and television ad revenue. I think they're taking money because you can buy so many more ads on Facebook, reach so many more, or certainly reach a more targeted audience on Facebook, and pay a lot less money than there. And I think these people are upset and are reporting kind of if Facebook struggle with privacy, but definitely pouncing upon it and taking advantage of the situation. And that you don't hear that discussed too often.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. We'll just keep all watching. Right. I doubt that they're going. I'm sure there's going to be plenty more coming, of these hit pieces, are definitely going to be coming out. And it's very interesting. It's very interesting now that people are being deplatformed as well. It kind of brings into question, you know, free speech versus kind of a moral or ethical responsibility of the company it's a very interesting topic. It's certainly an interesting topic, and I think it's only going to get more interesting in 2019. So that's a good find, Mr. Tony DiPrato. It's a good one.
Can't wait.
Now, Tony, tell us about your new shiny Ubuntu.
Well, I was recently on a trip to the United States, and I was going to have some time on the airplane and the airport, and I was like, you know what? I haven't used the newest Ubuntu actually in a long time. So I'm a Linux user, and normally, for the last like 4 or 5 years, what I've been doing is I have a Windows 10 machine, and I run VMware on that machine, and I install like whatever kind of Linux I want. And I've been using mostly Linux Mint. It's a type of, it's similar to Ubuntu in a lot of ways, but it's very small, lightweight Linux. And I use it for very specific things. Like I use it for network diagnostics. I use it to repair stuff. I use it to recover files. Like it's a great tool for that kind of stuff. But I was thinking, you know, I haven't used like Ubuntu or Linux as an operating system without Windows in a long time. So I have a fairly new Lenovo, so it's really, really easy to set it up. So I set up my SSD, and on my trip, I installed Ubuntu and set up a dual boot on my machine and booted into Ubuntu and started using it. And I've been using it now for about a week and a half exclusively, so not Windows at all.
Wow.
I'm on Windows today only because I did not have a chance to practice podcasting with Ubuntu. I normally practice stuff. I didn't want to waste our time today in case something happened. If you're not a Linux user, you're not really going to understand what I mean. But sometimes on Linux, like you have to configure things to work. And one of the reasons I like to use Linux is because, you know, it forces you to like keep your skills up. It forces you to think a little bit. But out of the box, it's great. I'm pretty much using Chrome for everything, just like a Chromebook. The system uses less, consumes less battery power than my Windows 10. The system, for some reason, the screen brightness is better under Ubuntu. I haven't figured this out. I figured that was part of the, you know, I figured that was part of the, just the hardware. But under Ubuntu, my screen brightness and resolution is a lot nicer. And yeah, everything's great. I've played videos with it. I've written some papers with it. And the next thing I'm going to try is I have some free credits with Amazon as a AWS like customer. I'm going to be trying AppStream on it next, and AppStream's going to let me run Photoshop on Ubuntu.
Wow. Well, I guess AppStream would work on any platform though, right? Not just
it'll work on any platform. Like it'll even I tell you what, I saw AppStream demoed on a new iPad Pro, like the big one.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I thought the iPad Pro was useful. It was like, hey, all it needed was software. Because the actual iPad Pro is awesome. The hardware is it's great. Like if you like, I hate iPads for a lot of reasons. Like, but and if you have to manage like 200-400 iPads, you will also develop the same anger that I have. But as an end user with an iPad Pro, if someone was like, here's an iPad Pro, I would take it and I would use it all the time. I'm not going to go out and buy one instead of having a laptop. And because, you know, I'm living overseas, my wife and I have definitely in the last few years developed a minimalist mentality. We are just trying to keep the amount of stuff we own to a minimum. But yeah, iPad Pros are great. The pen with the iPad Pro is great.
Yeah.
It is so great. Once I saw it with Photoshop and Premiere, like runs Premiere and Illustrator, I was like, wow, this thing is responsive. It can store in the Creative Cloud. Like, this is a good solution. And it's the same with Ubuntu. Like, I'm sure it's going to be just as good. I'm excited to try it out. And even Microsoft Office 365, I'm going to be testing that out. So I'm going to load Photoshop in and Office 365 because really the only things I need, I've thought about this a lot. The only thing I need on my Linux machine that I can't really get, you know, if it's like a Chromebook. So I'm running Ubuntu as its own operating system, so I can install software. It's no problem. But I was thinking, like, if I wanted to look at this as a model where I wanted kids to have an Ubuntu operating system, that means I could buy any hardware I wanted, put Ubuntu on it. I would lock it down so they couldn't install anything, and I would give them everything they need through AppStream. So basically, AppStream becomes like a kiosk of software.
Yeah.
And they log into AppStream, they get what they need. And I was thinking what I would need is I would need Photoshop and Adobe Premiere and maybe Illustrator. I wouldn't recommend doing After Effects or anything like that with any of this virtualized software. It takes too much. I would even say Adobe Premiere after a certain point is going to be too slow. I would put Excel, but you know, I don't even know if I would put anything else but Excel. I think you can do everything else in Google Docs. Google Presentations is fine. And I've been following Amazon is really pushing, like, internally in their offices, and they're inviting all these people in to view their no PowerPoint culture. They're pushing this, like, worldwide. I've seen multiple like, reviews. So what they've done, Patrick, is they invite journalists in to watch their meetings because they, for some reason, they're just so against PowerPoint, and they want everyone to stop using it. So I would just develop like kind of a very small core product pack and push it out. And maybe, you know, obviously like an IDE for writing software, if that's something people do, or web design, put that in there. But then, so the AppStream basically lets you virtualize all this software. It doesn't have to be installed. The processing power takes place in the Amazon cloud, not on the machine. It does obviously use the graphics card and stuff, but you've got a lot of back end coming from the Amazon cloud, and that's what I'm going to try next. And I'm pretty excited about it because, you know, I don't want to tell people to go buy Chromebooks, and I don't want to tell them that they have to like do everything with Google, but it would be pretty interesting if you could choose any hardware you wanted. Technically, you know, even if you wanted Apple hardware, this is theoretically possible. Any hardware you wanted. And then you get the apps that you need for your school or for your job or whatever all delivered to you. And that's it. Like you kind of choose your own platform, and then everything's just delivered to you remotely. And I think it's a really good idea.
It certainly is I think it's a great idea. I mean, you can have a Chromebook, a $200 Chromebook running Photoshop. That's impressive. You can have an iPad Pro running Microsoft Excel. Desktop version, Windows desktop version of Excel. That gives the end user so much more, in fact, the organization so much more flexibility to
And the thing is, like, I think the big problem with all of this is that it's all actually working really well, but the, I would say, evangelism and representation for K to 12 environments is really low. This is all going to universities right now. I mean, some of it isn't, but most of it's going to universities. I was reading last night, I was looking through some stuff Amazon's doing in education last night. They've got a huge push right now to develop more textbooks, e-textbooks, and Kindle options. But all of it seems to be for higher education.
Yeah, I actually attended one of their webinars about video streaming because I thought, oh, this might be something we can do. And it's unbelievable what they're doing with video streaming, Tony. It's unreal. They can live transcribe, and again, this is targeted for higher education. So you're in a lecture hall with like maybe 400 other students, and somebody's lecturing. But now, you know, 1,500 students could attend this lecture, and it'll translate live. You can have PowerPoints or whatever display automatically synced up to the presentation. People can download everything, all the resources the teacher has or the professor has on the fly, watch it. They can take their own notes. They can time, they can put, it's unreal what they do. And the webinar was, it was for education and military.
Right.
Those were their two on the webinar. They're like, this is who this webinar is for. But of course, if you're here, you're interested in, you know, but right now we're targeting public education and the military. And there, for the military, they gave an example of, let's say you have a tank, the tank can stream in real time from miles away, what's happening out in the field, like no delay at 1080p HD quality. And yeah, it's just fantastic. What kind of exciting and what they're doing. So
yeah, and I'm trying to figure out how to approach it, but I really want to try to find a way just to get in to a conversation at the right level with Amazon, because in some ways they're the best partner to work with, because really all you're doing is paying for infrastructure.
Yeah,
You're not getting ads. There's nothing really for them to monitor. Like, they're not reading emails. There's none of that. You're just paying for really good cloud services that just need a pricing model and a payment model that works for schools. And you know, Patrick, I'm still shocked and surprised though at how many schools are still doing everything in house.
Oh gosh, yeah, yeah. Me too.
I mean, I know that you do a lot. I know you do a lot in the house, and I'm not trying to be critical. It's just, it seems like anymore the risk of doing stuff in house is a lot higher compared to doing it in the cloud. That's really my only.
Oh yeah, point. We've been moving things to the cloud. But I was at an educational conference here in Indianapolis in November. A really good one, by the way, called HECTECH. HECCTECH. If you get an opportunity and you're in the Midwest, it's definitely worth your time. Anyway, I listened to a big public school, and they do everything in-house. They host their own PowerSchool, and they run everything through PowerSchool. So attendance, push notifications to families, payroll, I think. I don't know if PowerSchool does payroll. Can it do payroll?
Well, PowerSchool has all these partners, and there's I guess hundreds of companies, and they use the PowerSchool API. So what that means is that you just, all your employees, you load them into PowerSchool and as staff or teachers. And apparently PowerSchool's just added a new human resources module, which I haven't seen.
Oh, that's right. Anyway, they made that purchase. I think that was in 2017. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So you add all these people and you put all their information in, and then a payroll company software gets installed in the server room, right next to your PowerSchool. And they link together and securely all the demographic information, like name, address, phone number, all that moves over from PowerSchool, and that populates the billing the payroll software. So they have all these partners, but in order for it to work, usually, because we use the PowerSchool API with a few products, and It's awesome because you just, it's one, you put all the information in whenever parents or the office update it, it updates all the other systems, but it does a sync like every few hours. And if that sync breaks down,
oh yeah.
So sometimes the third party system will just basically say, you know, we can't process.
Yeah.
What's going on.
Yeah. So this goes back to the story, this public school system near Indianapolis. They do everything in house. And they had some power outages three Fridays in a row. The whole, like, not just the school, like that entire area. It wasn't, this isn't something, you know, not the school's infrastructure, but because they did everything in house, the IT director, he told me, he goes, we were dead in the water. Our phones were down. Our PA system was down. It was Friday. We had to do payroll. We couldn't do payroll because we couldn't get into our system, and our system is right there in that building. It's not as if we could go to a secure place off-site and work on this. It was there, and the server had no power. So we couldn't do – and even if the server had power, we didn't have Wi-Fi. The person would have to, like, plug into the – and he goes, we were dead in the water. We didn't know what students were here, what students had been checked out, what students were sick. We had no information. We were completely blind, and that's a scary situation for a school to be in. If you don't have power, you're, as you put it, Tony, here, if you need power, you're gonna have a bad day.
So Patrick talked to me about this a bit yesterday, and I decided to do some research. So I've been slowly trying to study and prepare for a very difficult certification. After I move back to the U.S., I'm going to get a bit more serious about it because I've got to take the exam there. It's the CISSP. It's the Certified Information Systems Security Professional. Anyway, it basically, each of the areas of this exam cover various ISO, like International Standards Organization standards. And there are standards for doing risk management for technology. And here, let me just try to, like, summarize this so it's not super boring. Basically, you look at the things that can threaten you wherever you're at, and then you figure out how to deal with them. So, for example, if you were in California, earthquake and maybe wildfires would definitely be on the top of your list. But if you were in, let's say, Tennessee, earthquakes would not be on your list. Maybe just flooding. That's how it works. Now, the question I had yesterday is, well, okay, how common are power outages? I really hadn't thought about it. Like, if you live, like, this guy that I work with, Daniel, he's a high school principal. He lived in Africa for a long time. They once didn't have power for 10 days at his school.
Oh, my God. Okay?
And he said that power outages were really common. Okay, so I was, you know, so they had a plan, you know, for it. So I was like, wait a second, maybe these power outages are causing a huge problem because they're just, you know, it's America. Maybe they're not a lot of power outages. I was wrong. So apparently in America, you can get data for all these power outages. Now the data has to be reported. So, you know, there's some blanks, but I think the data is pretty decent. So what I did is I downloaded the 2017 data for power outages across the U.S. It's the spreadsheet they make is horrible, so I kind of consolidated it and moved the data into a Google Doc. And I found some pretty, you know, shocking things. Like, basically, let's just pick a state. The state you were talking about before, Patrick, was Oregon, right?
That was one state that he had brought up where businesses can get fined if they can't process or meet payroll in a timely manner. The government will step in and fine them. Yeah.
All right. Of course, because it's a contract and you're breaking it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Hold on just a second. I'm just going to pull up Oregon here on this spreadsheet. So there's a few of the power companies in Oregon either reported having no outages or they didn't report at all, but I would say 50% of them had outages. Okay, in one instance, all the customers in this area last year, in 2017, experienced, the average customer experienced 10 hours of outages. Now, that doesn't mean it was out for 10 hours once. In fact, it looks like it was out for about 5 hours twice.
Yeah, and okay. And those outages could have been in the middle of the night as well, when right. usage was very low. But we don't know.
But I'm going through this, and another area, 5.8 hours, 5.2, 4.1, 3.6. So basically, if you were to just do your research, if you were in any state and you decide like, look, you're going to host your own stuff, fine. If you do research on your power outages in your state and you realize that there's a median, maybe you can't take an average, but maybe the median is like 3.6 hours. That means you need to be able to run your entire operation for 4 hours without power supplied to you. You need to have 4 hours of backup power. That's what that means.
Or at least enough backup power to do what you need to do.
Your core services. And, you know, a lot of people try to solve that by just buying the APC units, the little power backups that go in the server room. But I'll tell you what, like, to really do this stuff, you need a generator. Yeah. You need like a diesel generator, unless you're going to like have Elon come, you know, fix your building up with some batteries. You need the APC units are actually really expensive if you get big ones. There's some that can do like 12, 15. I've seen huge ones. There's like a massive battery. It does like 12, 15 hours.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, diesel generator hooked up. That your APC comes on, it gives you like 30 minutes to get your diesel generator online, and your diesel generator probably can keep you going for more than 4 hours.
Yeah.
But it's cost effective if you can get one installed safely, and you know you've got to store the fuel and all of that. But my point is that like if you're using a cloud service, those data centers, they're already meeting this ISO standard for sure. They're all meeting it.
Yeah.
They're inspected all the time. They're liable for data loss. They already have generators. They already have backup power. They can keep your stuff running. So just keep that in mind if you're going to start running stuff internally. And these stats, here's the thing. It's like, oh, people are like, oh, that's not that bad. 3.6 hours total in a year. That's only power failure from the provider. That's not local power failure. That's not somebody taking power out in the building or making some mistake on your property. So that's the thing. I mean, it seems like it's really common for power outages to happen, and you should just, if you're going to host, you just need to be prepared. Like,
yeah.
And there's no excuse. I guess when I looked this up, this took me about an hour, and I realized that there's just no excuse. You can get this data. So you can, you know, and I've kept this pretty confidential, but if you download the actual documentation, which I will send Patrick links to later so that he can put it in the show notes. You can go straight to this website. You can see which power station services your school, and you know what the outages are. And you shouldn't just download 2017. You should download 2017 to 2014 and see if it's getting better or worse over the last like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Patrick, with one of the guys you talked to, his situation's getting worse.
Yeah, and it's just an ongoing problem. And it's not it's a developing area, but they're not affluent, but there's not a tremendous amount of poverty either. A lot of, you know, middle class and people who live there. But he said, there's nothing we can, you know, they're trying to improve it and trying to keep up with growth, but they've had brownouts. He goes, it's just a common thing, and they tend to happen on Friday. And we were not prepared. Like I had to, he said, I had to call the superintendent one day, and I said, we have 10 minutes left. All they had was an APC, like you said, which is just a big giant battery hooked up to the server. And he goes, our batteries are working. And for anybody who's ever been in a power outage and you hear beeping, loud beeping, really loud beeping, that's probably an APC or uninterrupted power supply, UPS backup working its tail off. He goes, but we have about 12 minutes. So whatever email you need to send parents or to the staff, You have to do it now because we're going to be losing phones and internet and everything in all of our buildings. So, oh.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is you've got to, if you're going to use APCs, you need to like test them. You can't just push the button and test them. You need to actually schedule a time for the power to be shut off and see what happens.
Yeah.
I did this at a school when I was in Shanghai. They had this huge battery backup. And because we were, the school's in an area where there was a lot of new construction, and the government would actually contact us probably once a month and say, we're turning the power off for 2 hours today to install something. And so one weekend, I went in, I made the IT guys come in. They weren't happy. And I'm like, this is what we're going to do today. I'm going to go into the server room, and you guys are going to pull the power. And they did it, and everything went dead because not only was the battery system not hooked up correctly, they never charged it.
Oh.
The batteries have to be charged.
Yeah.
And it took like, this battery pack was huge. It took like 3 or 4 days for this thing to charge. It was about 3.5 feet tall. The thing was huge.
And some batteries, if they stay discharged, like for so long, if they're at 0% for so long, they just can't. Is it? I guess I've seen it with cell phones, and maybe it's the same thing here, where they just can't be charged. They just
It seems to. What do people call that? Like battery memory or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But like this. Again, if you're gonna do stuff in house, there's a lot more to it than just saying, "Hey, we don't want to use the cloud." Like you need all these processes and procedures. This is why people moved to the cloud. It was because the stuff was really expensive.
Yeah, yeah, and
I think it's why a lot of people did.
Yeah, we do at our school. We're a small school, but our entire school information system is in the cloud. We do our payroll online in the cloud. I mean, pretty much. Everything we do is in the cloud. We do have a couple things that do run locally, but they're video surveillance, our phones, our phones, our PA system. But who knows? We might look at moving those to the cloud as well. I know that there are systems out there that offer that now. Whereas before, when we had all that installed, it really I don't think was an option. But so.
So Patrick, you know what could prevent all of these power outages if we just used artificial intelligence to manage the power?
Well, it's gonna no, Tony. Do you know why, Tony? AI still sucks. It sucks, Tony. It sucks. It still sucks.
Patrick Watson's helping people every day solve problems around the world.
Oh gosh, you know I was reading some articles today. Watson is. I think IBM overpromised on Watson. They took Watson and they put Watson on the TV game show Jeopardy, and it trounced everybody, these really smart people. And they're like, come, you know, call IBM. Watson can come work for you. Look how smart Watson is. And everywhere Watson has gone, Watson has been pretty much fired. And I believe IBM has scaled down... their Watson division. Here it is. IBM lays off at least 40 Watson Health employees or something. You know, the promise of AI is exciting. It really is. But it's not very good. In fact, we have an AI system that monitors our students' Gmail and their Google Drive activity. And what it does is it scours through all of this and it looks for keywords that could be related to violence. Profanity, self-harm, cyberbullying, or explicit content, stuff of that nature, right? And it goes through here, and this is a free service. I'm not going to say the name because I'm about to sound off on it, so I'm not going to say the name of the company because I know they're trying to do good work here. But I have a dashboard, and we've had 91,000 issues reported. And of those 91,000 issues reported, zero, Tony, have actually led us to take any action. Zero. None.
Out of 91,000. So they're all just like false flags?
Well, yeah. So, for example, one person had some notes in Google Drive. And they had quoted, they had in quotes that somebody who had used profanity. And so that showed up as profanity. We had somebody had who emailed somebody else and just said, "Hey, man, you know," just jokingly, like, "Why are you being a jerk?" Well, that was cyberbullying. The word jerk was cyberbullying. And what's kind of neat about it is that it can actually look at pictures and read. If there's text in the pictures or handwriting, it can read that. I don't know how well it can read handwriting, but we had somebody who had taken a picture of a news article. And again, there was profanity in that news article, and it got flagged. But it was a news article that she was using for an assignment as a research, as a piece of research. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, but
I'll tell you what, I was watching like, it was like one of the hackathon things. It was a couple years old, but the guy was talking about basically how to make money with spam. And he's like, this still the best way to make money on the internet is spam emails. He's like, it's still the best way to make money quick. And he was explaining how they design stuff to deal with these AI scanners. And I guess, like, you know, they cause a problem for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then spammers adjust. And it takes months before the AI scanner can figure it out. And I know it's going to get faster, but basically, these guys, it's like their job, right? They just sit there all day, and their purpose in life is to make money sending spam emails. That's their whole purpose. That's all they're doing.
Yeah.
So it seems like to me what's going to happen is those guys are going to develop AI to make spam emails.
Yeah.
And it's going to be designed to do one job, and it's going to learn a lot faster than an AI defense system that's literally having to cover multiple scenarios. I mean, that's how I see it. I don't know. Like, there's just nothing really beats user education at this point.
No, nothing. You know, at all.
I'll tell you what. Like, we've been using Cisco Umbrella for about 8 months now. We can talk about it in detail later, and maybe I'll do a blog post on it. But this is how we're doing it. I mean, it's pretty effective out of the box because Cisco's database is basically crowdsourced with Cisco clients all over the world. So basically, you have millions of human beings contributing stuff to the list of stuff that needs to be blocked. And we just make it possible for people to send us things that need to be blocked. And then we make it possible for kids to ask for things to be unblocked that are blocked accidentally.
Oh, that's very nice. That's very nice.
It's not really, you know, it's not really that difficult to do. And I would say it's been really effective, and we're paying about $4,000 US a year for it, maybe.
Mm.
Like it does, you know, it does pretty much everything. It slows down connectivity a little bit for students, but it's not like having a proxy. I mean, it takes about 5 MB total off their speed. I think I was testing it the other day. So instead of them getting like 100 MB a second, they're getting like, you know, 95. So I don't really care.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know, but it's basically, you know, I know Cisco would say they have AI running, but it seems like it's mostly crowdsourced. So people go through and they block stuff and then categorize it, and then all that stuff gets categorized back into a central database that everybody has access to.
Yeah. But I mean, you're right. AI still sucks. So for people out there who are like, "Oh, they're, you know, teaching is going to be obsolete. There's going to be no teachers in 10 years or 20 years time." That's complete garbage. Or AIs are going to take over system and just run everything. That's not going to happen. We're so far away from really functional AI, and Siri, yeah, and Google Assistant and Cortana, that's not artificial intelligence. That's just listening to your voice and turning it into a web search.
I would say if AI evolves, it's going to work like this. There's going to be like a refrigerator that has like a piece of software in it that makes like recommendations to you, and that's all it's doing. It's focused on this one job in the very simple kind of piece of hardware. And then you keep making really stupid choices, and somehow it remembers that you make stupid choices. And it gets, and then one day it just gets mad at you for making the same mistake over and over. And then when you open the door, it like traps you in the freezer and kills you. That's how it's going to evolve, I think. It's going to be a human annoying a computer to the point where it just can't take it anymore.
Yeah,
that's what I think is going to happen. So, I don't know. You know, you're right. The Siri stuff, I was listening to the No Agenda show, and they were talking about one of their producers who works as a Google content approver. And when people say, okay, Google, to do searching, and they look stuff up, part of her job is to review a percentage of these searches and decide if they need to be blocked in the future or whatever. But apparently, the recording, like when you say, okay, Google, show me where the closest target is, she hears that, but apparently the microphone and the okay, Google, they stay active for quite a while after your request. So this content reviewer says she hears tons of other stuff that's not part of the request, like personal stuff.
Oh, wow.
So forget eavesdropping. If you're going to make a system that's going to learn, you can't have garbage at the end of the learning. You can't just be like, how would the system know the difference between a request and if that request is being filled or not so it can learn, and the garbage at the end, if it's still human language? So these systems are far from, I mean, they're advanced compared to maybe what we had, you know, two decades ago, but they're very far from being,
oh yeah,
like sentient beings that are going to like control us.
And this service, I mean, if 90, let's say we have 191,000, but there is that one time where it does bring us to attention, where somebody is doing something they shouldn't do, and that we, or they need help, and it gives us an opportunity to intervene. I mean that makes it worth it. We're not paying anything for this service, so it's easy for me to sit here and gripe about it, but it has no sense of context at all. Like somebody took a picture of a science book, like a couple pages out of a science book, and they were talking about different alcohols. We're not talking about Jim Beam alcohol. We're talking about like, you know, different type of chemical alcohols. And it flagged it for drug and alcohol abuse. You know, there was nothing in the email except the picture of these three pages of this science textbook. That was it. That they were sending to somebody who was sick and wasn't at school that day. But it flagged it. And it's a great idea, but it's so far off. And whenever people talk about AI, if somebody comes to your school and said, you know what, we got this great system, it's going to keep your students safe, and we rely on AI, and this AI is fantastic. It's not fantastic, it's garbage. But it might help you do your job and to filter and go through and quickly search for problems. I don't know. It's just there it is. AI still sucks. AI still sucks. Just sucks. Anyway, I don't have any other topics. Tony, do you?
No other topics. And I put the links in for the power stuff at the bottom of the agenda, so you can share that out.
Yep, it'll definitely be in the show notes. And of course, folks, the best way to enjoy the show is go to itbabble.com or download it on your favorite podcasting app, and you can enjoy all the goodness on the go. So anyway, for itbabble, I am Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next podcast. Keep babbling out there, everybody.